Hearing live at democracynow.org beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Clark, Dina Gozder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tommy Warnoff, Cam Baker, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, Mary Conlon, Juan Carlos Davila. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Nagara, Hugh Grant, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And in case it wasn't obvious, 1 p.m. has come and gone. So if you're looking forward to that hearing, you missed it. But it's available online all over the place. Try cspan.org. And just check in on the news. Oh, you know what? Listen to the next hour here on WUSB Stony Brook, where a delightful little program called Off the Wall will be coming your way until 7 p.m. Stay tuned. I don't care what people on Twitter say. I stand by my statement. It's a delightful little show. I think it is. You know, if you disagree, well, you know, maybe it's not the place for you. But every week at this time, Kyle and I get together and discuss world events, local events, personal events, all sorts of events. It's all about events.
Past, present, occurring, future.
Future, yeah. We spend a lot of time in the future.
How could they say that?
It's Twitter, you know?
Honestly.
Yeah. What are you going to do? But yeah, you know, hearings, we'll talk about the hearings here because we were watching the hearings. What do you think? You know, to me, seeing these January 6th hearings taking place, not always in prime time, sometimes in not so prime time in the middle of the afternoon, they're riveting. They're just so riveting because these are regular, average people, you know, people that we often don't even see eye to eye on various issues, you know, conservatives, people like that. But the things they're saying are just so compelling and eye-opening about what they were being asked to do on January 6th and what this country was facing and is continuing to face. And you know, talking about the future, my God, what we're going to be facing in the future, it's quite a bit frightening. And we'll certainly be talking about that. But the hearings themselves, I'm just so happy. I mean, maybe happy isn't the right word, but I just feel grateful that they're happening, that people are being called to account, that we're finding out the truth, and that, you know, so many people are getting the opportunity to see this when it would be shielded from them normally, to see what was actually happening on that day. It was whitewashed so much by a lot of the mainstream media as just a protest. But when you see the actual video, when you see, you know, cops injured on the ground, when you hear about people who died, maybe you didn't know so many people died as a result of that, a direct result, it really changes the whole perspective. And you have to ask yourself, how did we get here? I mean, we kind of know how we got here. We saw the warning signs for a long time. But I guess the question now is, okay, so now that we know that we're here, what do we do about it? And how do we prevent that? And that's not a political question. That's a question of the survival of this country into the future.
Yeah, the word that came to mind was relieved. I was relieved, maybe not as happy, not certainly hearing the retelling of some pretty unhappy moments in our country's recent history, but the relief of just that their stories were taken to heart and that someone was taking account of how this whole event played out. And it's clear each committee member has an assignment, a particular part of the puzzle they're speaking to and going to help bring to the public's attention, and in a very slow way. It's like we're rolling back and going through it piece by piece in a methodic and very, some might say, dry way of looking at such a startling event for many people. It's jarring, and it's hard to go back and think about and look at but important, and the various terms and things that come to mind for everyone involved. And yeah, like how it was portrayed, what kinds of talking points and lies have been told afterwards, how convinced people are about such unhonest and untruthful characterizations, mm-hmm. and then to hear quite the opposite now is even just an amazing contrast for the moment.
Yeah, and you know it does mean so much that there are Republicans on that committee, that panel. It would not nearly carry the same amount of weight if it was just one political side. Regardless of the fact that the leadership on the other side declined to participate, and that's something we have to remember, is that they had the opportunity, and they decided not to take it. And if they had taken it, you know, I dare say this committee would be just filled with bickering back and forth and all kinds of the usual that we see in Congress. It's good to see people from different political sides working together, because this is what you can accomplish when you do that. And to see how this story, it might be shocking you now, and that's because of the spin, the way the propaganda works, where something that you saw happen, that you know about, it's portrayed in a different way so that when you think about it, no, it wasn't so bad. But now, you know, all of America gets to see right in their face, yeah, it was that bad. It really was. 20 million people saw the Thursday prime time hearing a couple of weeks ago. And that's massive, you know, that so many people would be exposed to this, because you have to realize a lot of them probably didn't even know it was this serious. Now that we do, you know, there's hope that we can move forward in somewhat of a united and positive way.
You're right. The committee itself is functioning, it also appears. Like, functionality is something I think we've missed in government. And
yeah.
They're taking every bit of this very seriously, and even assigning requests and some sort of, I don't know, public homework.
Mm-hmm.
Liz Cheney today was requesting Cipollone, Pat Cipollone, what's his, he's one of the attorneys. They're actively pursuing people who are still not cooperating. It wasn't just the leadership that refused to participate in this
right.
panel. There are a great many people of interest in parts of this story that to this day will not cooperate.
Right. And that was almost becoming the norm, where nobody would cooperate. And they thought that would work. They thought they could get away with that. They can if we let them. And if we demand answers and hold hearings and learn the facts, they won't get away with it. That's an important thing to remember.
My last question to answer or pose the question is, you know, well, what do we do with this? Where do we go from here? I think we keep hearing, because it's not over yet. There's plenty more to witness and take in as the public digests it, and it becomes part of the conversation.
You know, looking at this committee and how much they are accomplishing, how much they are showing us, I want people to think about that. Think that is government. That is what government can do. And that's what we should strive for. Instead of pointing fingers and saying, okay, you didn't do this, therefore, you know, we have to, what's the point of voting? And it's all, the system is all completely corrupt. You know, it probably is all corrupt. But if we actually have a plan and we get a government that, gets past all the stonewalling, you know, it's possible to do things. It's possible to actually pass laws that we want. You know, the recent mass shootings united so many people, but virtually nothing gets done because of all the blocking by one side in opposition to what people actually want. So that's something that we really need to see as the goal. You know, if we get more people in there that will basically act at the will of the people, do things that we want them to do, then we'll actually see progress. You know, it's as simple as that. But if we lose faith and don't show up, well, then guess what? We move backwards instead. The other side that wants to continue to block any progress, despite the will of the people, they get to run things for however many more years.
Speaking of union and unity in this country, the distinction between the leadership, I think, is that however popular the current president is, his big request was for people to unify around this country, which is emblematic in this kind of functionality and cooperation. Previous administration was, in this here as this hearing is showing us, far more interested in unifying around a person, not the country.
Yeah, you know, and that's something people need to remember. Being president, it's not a popularity contest. I mean, yeah, you get elected, sure, but when you're doing your job, you're going to be pissing people off on all sides, and everyone is freaking out over low popularity figures. I look at if the person is saying the right things, and when they have the opportunity to actually do something, if they're doing the right things. And while I'm not completely satisfied, I am satisfied enough that I know this is a better road to be on than the other road we might have taken. And when it comes down to it, you know, in 2024, whoever is facing Joe Biden, assuming he is running again, will that person be more popular? And I really, honestly, doubt they will be, based on all the things that have been coming out of the Republican Party recently. Now, it's incredible to me. You know, you mentioned Liz Cheney, the daughter of Dick Cheney, you know, the vice president. You know, we've done many shows here when he was vice president, George W. Bush was president, and just I could not imagine somebody I was more in opposition to. And to say that his daughter is actually standing up for democracy and doing the right thing, despite what I'm sure is a long list of things that I passionately disagree with her on, that should tell you what it's really all about. You can disagree. You can you know, completely not see the logic in what somebody else is saying and still respect them and still realize they're important to the process. That's not true of a lot of people. Now, I'm gonna actually, if I can do this, I'm going to play something that you might have heard about, and this is all dependent on whether this computer will cooperate. This is a political ad that is either circulating or has circulated, but for some reason it's still on Twitter. I'm going to try to play it and see if it works the first time. Okay, it didn't even try to play. All right.
Is it a real ad?
It was a real ad. Hold on a second. I have to close that page that just opened up. What happened there?
You know what I mean, though, like something that's made to look like an ad but isn't really an official ad from a campaign or something?
No, this is a real ad.
This is a real ad?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can keep talking while I'm trying to get this to work.
Well,
I found it. Okay. I was trying to play a picture, not an actual image. So.
Well, I'm here if you need me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, okay. Well, 1 second here. All right. I just want to do that, and I have to turn the volume up there. Okay, here we go. Listen to this.
I'm Eric Greitens, Navy SEAL, and today we're going rhino hunting. The rhino feeds on corruption and is marked by the stripes of cowardice. Join the MAGA crew. Get a rhino hunting permit. There's no bagging limit, no tagging limit, and it doesn't expire until we save our country. Eric Greitens, Navy.
Okay, we're not going to play it a second time. But that is a political ad from Eric Greitens. And you can find it pretty easily. Now, Eric Greitens describes himself on Twitter as a proud dad, Navy SEAL, the 56th governor of Missouri, an America First candidate for the U.S. Senate. And what he has done is basically encourage people to go hunting for rhinos. Not the endangered species, which is awful too, but human beings. Republicans in name only is what rhino stands for in their world. This is a disgusting ad. You see military people going into a residence and basically dropping all kinds of canisters and opening fire, killing. You know, they're not even pretending anymore. They're basically saying it's okay to kill these people. It's okay to hunt them. There is no other way that you can interpret this. It's not sarcastic. It's not supposed to be funny. It is going to encourage people. And, you know, hearing some of the testimony today about people who were working to make sure the election was fair, and how they were being threatened, how they were having people come to their homes, how they were afraid to even go to the grocery store and have their name spoken out loud because of these people, because of the MAGA crowd, because of Trump's orders. I mean, I can't believe we're talking about the United States, but we are. This is real. This guy put this ad out. It's still up on Twitter. Why is it still up on Twitter? He's basically encouraging violence. I mean, Twitter is saying this violates our standards, but we feel it might be interesting to have this up. Yeah, it is interesting, and I just played it on the radio, mostly so that it will be archived for all time and so that we can look back on this moment and say, oh, my God, we were stupid back then. But this is disgusting. There should be action taken. This guy should be completely disqualified from running for dog catcher, let alone the Senate.
Sounds like a terrorist video.
It does. I mean, how is this not terrorism?
Yeah, I'd like to know the distinctions. Like, what's missing? What if he had slipped, which I don't think he did. I think this is genuinely...
How would he have slipped?
Yeah. You know, like, made one mistake that doesn't qualify it? Because, I don't know, I'm seeing some alarming indications in the tone of it. That's their own, too, right? Their own party and basically they're having a encouraging a purge, seeing something that most Democrats and a lot of bipartisan people are trying to confront as a bug, a terrible problem. They want to use to threaten their own to cooperate and go along with again this cult of personality.
Well, I mean, yeah, they when things like this happen throughout the world, throughout history, generally the purge comes first for those closest to the core. You know, whether it's, Stalin's inner circle, Mussolini's most trusted people. That's where they strike first to have only the loyal people around you. But don't think that you're safe because you're 180 degrees away from these people. You are the enemy. You are the real enemy. And they will come for you. They will come for us at some point. Absolutely. If they continue to have any degree of power. And we don't have to say a word. Just let them talk and it'll prove everything that, we've been warning about for years. I mean, look. We see what is happening now with Roe versus Wade. We see that it's pretty much on death row, to coin a phrase. And lives are being destroyed already as a result of that. And the decision hasn't even come out yet. You know, an unprecedented move of somebody with courage. We've gotten the warning as to what's ahead. And the opportunity to show our disgust and to do something, to not be silent, to not be victims, to send a very clear message to the Supreme Court that you work for us. And if you start working against us, which is what that decision will do, with a significant majority of people not wanting these types of restrictions, this kind of control over something that is not the business of these elderly white guys that seem to think they hold the key to what morality is. If they don't see that, then something has to be done. Something has to change. Because the Supreme Court is, it's no longer either. It's no longer supreme, and it's not a court. It's something political that has been building. And, we see it in the way the Second Amendment is distorted. We see it in Roe versus Wade. We see it in all kinds of things to come that I'm too afraid of. But, you know, if you want a preview, look no further than Texas. I mean, the things that they've been doing, at their GOP convention, I guess, is what they're having right now.
Yeah, it's basically this new platform they're coming out with.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna read a story I never thought that I'd actually be reading. But in the platform voted on by delegates at the party's convention, they agreed that homosexuality is an abnormal lifestyle choice. Yeah. And They agreed on the language that said Republicans don't believe in granting special status to LGBTQ plus people, and also agreed on a plank that states the party opposes all efforts to validate transgender identity. Don't be surprised. It was the next logical step. And if you think that somehow things are going to be safe for all of us, you're wrong. Because they're setting it all up. They're setting it up in the courts. They're setting it up in the Senate. They're setting it up in the House. They're setting it up everywhere. So that we won't have a leg to stand on. I mean, yeah, sure, the vast majority of people will be opposed to it, but we won't have any power. So, one by one, you will see that certain groups will be alienated, criminalized, persecuted. You know, all the things that you know, we escaped from in the past, or thought we did. And this is not some fringe group. This is the Republican Party in Texas. And if they continue to hold power, you can bet this will spread. It's disgusting. It really is. And there have been a whole bunch of things coming out of Texas in the last couple of days. As you mentioned, Kyle, the people closest are the ones that are in the crosshairs right now. Senator John Cornyn, not one of our friends, but he was jeered at the Texas Republican Convention for his role in Senate gun talks. And these are talks that do absolutely nothing, in my opinion. The only thing that's significant is it's the first time in 30 years that they've agreed on anything, you know? But it's so timid, it's so pathetic, that I hesitate to even call it progress. I mean, I know it is a step.
So you don't even have to list all the things it's missing.
That would take forever. It really would. But, boy, you know, I'm not opposed to it. Sure. If it's the first step of many, okay, great. But if we say, okay, there it is, we took a step, now we sit back for another 30 years, no, absolutely not. Anyway, because he was even open to that, just like even people like Mitch McConnell were open to that, he was jeered, drowned out by chance of no red flags. Think about that. No red flags. So basically anybody, people who are violent, people who are unstable, people who have issued threats, people who are abusive, no red flags. They can get as many guns as they want. When they do something, you will say, we should have stopped him because he was mentally ill. And I'm certain they will go after anyone who's mentally ill, who everyone knows is less likely to commit violent acts than people who are red flag for other reasons. But no, no red flags, because he basically is taking this really, or agreeing to take this really timid step. He is now the target. One hardline guns rights group demanded his apology for mocking his law-abiding constituents. John Cornyn is the definition of a two-faced politician. This is not anything I really disagree with there. He claims to support the Second Amendment, but is actually working to eviscerate our gun rights by cutting deals with anti-gun Democrats, and when his constituents publicly held him accountable, he called them a mob. Yeah, they're upset that he referred to the mob of people chanting no red flags as a mob. What do you want him to call you, an ice cream truck? I mean, you're a mob of people chanting something. It's a mob. That's literally what the word means. But no, they're upset at that. The logic, it's just, it's not there. There's no logic. And, you know, I'm content to sit back and watch them destroy each other. Only, you know, only to realize that these people aren't powerless. They hold a lot of power. And they're quite capable of getting more power. And it's pretty damn scary.
No, and the time to get to a point of, I don't know, agreement and to speak out about some of this stuff is now. It's not about tearing apart groups, tearing apart people that are aware of this stuff, that are really standing up for what is right, for democracy, all of those things matter more than ever. And I think that sitting back and watching, yeah, they on one side can do that, and there's, of course, you know, it's nice not to hear about more groups or, you know, different parts of buildings that are contentious. I don't know. It was never about bathrooms, was it, you know? So I just feel like the whole moment is about people being more individualized and not in agreement. I've just seen a lot of people tearing each other apart as well, like in the face of this, while this is going on, like all the way around. And I think we need to recognize really how bad that is for the kinds of boring grassroots efforts that take energy, that take work, that take people getting together that maybe wouldn't ordinarily organize, whether it's a labor issue or abortion or other topics. Like, there's a clear agenda. There's a clear co-opting and a change in the tone overall, like civility and the way people, their attitudes and behaviors around the use of government. And it's really easy to raise a lot of contempt and feel alienated when really there are a lot of other people that are noticing this stuff and working on it as well. And I just don't want people to get lost. I mean, it is amusing, but we have these very, very same things going on in all kinds of different efforts, local or regional or national projects otherwise. And there's a malaise. I think people are very on edge with so much of this contention. But there's no reason to be totally complacent in the face of it.
You know, seeing the hatred that is being expressed towards various groups of people, particularly right now, I think it's the trans community that's seeing it the most. But make no mistake, it will be the gay community. It will be Jews. It will be African Americans. You might not see it right now, but it is a very, very logical progression. But, you know, you have to wonder, why are these people so insanely obsessed with the trans community? Why are they so intent on denying them any rights or enjoyment of life? It's just, every day I read a new story about something that they're doing to hurt them. And it's sickening. It really is. It's bugging me a lot.
And it's straight up gaslighting from the same party that we once would, you know, hear touting of individual freedoms and, you know, freedom from government telling you what to do. And they're trying to write all this new stuff to gaslight people and stir things up. And it's, I think, time to say enough is enough for much of this. And, you know, it's gone too far, like so much.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obsession with bathrooms, obsession with what kids are doing in school, obsession with what they are exposed to. A good example, someone recommended this this TV show. The first episode of which is available pretty freely. What was it called? Generation Drag or something?
Yeah.
It's about these kids that are participating in some kind of a drag drag ball. Is that the right phrase?
Yeah, they do like a mock ball.
Every case, though, these kids, and you know, they range in age, I think from like 12 on up, they are the ones that are enthusiastic about participating in this. And their parents are kind of, you know, a little confused, but supportive. And that is such an important thing, is for parents to be supportive of their kids when they're trying to express themselves or come to terms with their own identity. And in just about all these cases, these kids were miserable, unhappy. picked upon until something awoke in them and they saw this community that they wanted to know more about, they wanted to be a part of, and they quite literally are blossoming and becoming really beautiful people. The response to this show, and you can look it up yourself on places like IMDb and just on the internet in general, such hatred, such ignorance, saying things like, this show exists to groom our kids to become transsexual and all kinds of horrible things, and failing to actually recognize the fact that it's the kids who want to do this, the kids who are enthusiastic about this. You see the same hatred expressed towards this latest activity where drag queens are reading stories to kids in libraries. We had it here in Port Jefferson. And these rednecks are showing up, threatening them, being violent. Kids in libraries, being read stories by drag queens. What exactly is the harm in that? They see a friendly person dressed in a different way, reading them a story. Kids love this. It doesn't turn your kid into a drag queen. That's something that your kid decides to do or not do. But if anyone is grooming their kids, how about these rednecks in the pickup trucks that are insisting that their kids not be exposed to this and that they become just like them? That's the real grooming going on, and we accept that every damn day. It just really annoys me to see such ignorance and to realize that the victims here are those kids who will never get to express themselves, who will never get to be who they are supposed to be, who they want to be. Do you know the suicide rate of teenagers in this area has quadrupled over the past few years? Yeah. And that's a big deal. That means something. That means that we are failing in giving our kids what they need. Acceptance, happiness, space, you know? And to see the messed up world that we're in right now, all the gloom about climate change and all the hatred and anger in politics. How do you think that lands on somebody who's still trying to figure out the world, period, themselves? And to have you not accept your kid for who they are, you know, and who they want to be. You know, I still have nightmares about growing up, and I had it relatively easy. I mean, I got, you know, pretty relentlessly bullied a lot, but I got through it. But I'll never forget that feeling of dread every day going to school. And today, you know, with cyberbullying and all kinds of other pressures that, you know, we inflict upon our kids, I don't think I can even imagine the stress. I think the important thing to convey, though, is that, you know, if you are a kid out there, none of this really matters. None of the pressures that are put on you really matter. And if you express who you are, that's always going to be enough. And all the worries that you might be experiencing about future and finances and what other people think, you know, to me it felt like the entire world, you know, was in opposition to my existence. It's really easy to feel that. So easy to feel that. And when you don't have a lot, and, you know, when you're 12 or 13, you really don't have a lot, it can become way too much to bear.
Yeah, we have to find that space and really care for people, I think, a lot more. This is, it's tumultuous. It's a tumultuous time to be a young person, and I've had a lot of my own feelings about growing up too, and yeah, I relate with what you're saying, probably not to the same degree, but I get how people are, and yeah, the tone lately, there's a lot of anger out there, and I get it, but it's I think misplaced and unwarranted.
Absolutely.
And it's unfair to take out whatever it is, you know, your circumstance or errors, whatever's going on with you. You never know what else is going on with other people. So, school is just, it's totally different now than what I would ever think it was. So,
you know,
getting through that
when I say this, you know, I'm not unsympathetic to parents because a lot of them are trying to figure things out too. And you see it, you know, in that program we were talking about. You see the confusion. This is all new to a lot of people. Okay, you know, it's good, you know, it's good to realize you're uninformed, you know? It's not a bad thing to be ignorant. It's just bad when you don't want to learn. And we all have something to learn. So I get it, you know, if you're a parent and you're confused by all the changing pronouns and different landscapes that we weren't familiar with in the past. But just realize that your perspective is not everyone's perspective, and you have to listen to people, especially your kids. You know, this guy tweeted something, Billy Prempe. He is America First congressional candidate, New Jersey, Congressional District 9. He said, "My generation grew up with clowns. Today's generation has drag queens stuffed in their face. Can someone explain how obnoxious gender-bending, sexual confusion-inducing men in dresses is good for the mentality of developing kids? Hint, it's not. Stop the madness." I couldn't resist. I replied to the guy. I said, "I think it's the kids who need to explain it to you. Because believe me, they get it a lot more than you ever will." But, you know, imagine that being the overwhelming sentiment in your environment, where you're not necessarily into the same things that this closed-minded bigot is into. And I say that with all respect.
Yeah, there's a lot of selfishness. There's this nosiness, but there's no, like, self and no empathy. It's, like, all selfish because you're not thinking of people who may not have had the right environment. They may not have had the same circumstance, so that they don't really understand what it might be like to not have to deal with the same things. And I think that kind of inconsideration does not make for a healthy community.
I'm looking at this Associated Press story, kind of echoes what we were saying. Drag queen story hours are under attack around the country. The reading program's organizers say the opposition is scaring children, not protecting them. Think about what your words and your actions actually accomplish.
I think that's so insane because there's so much stuff that is scary that's on, you know, children's screens and in their worlds that, or, you know, maybe in their very environment, you know, in their neighborhood or in their home life. And you're judging this because you personally, it doesn't conform to what you think of as what life and what the world is. But, you know, the world isn't necessarily just one person's worldview, and far too many people fall into, I think, not being imaginative enough to consider that there are other ways of being, and you may not have any idea. And of course, you've been told things, or you create some judgment in your mind. And then run around and act based on bad info as though you know better. And it's wrong. It does not reflect the kind of society that anyone here wants to be a part of.
Okay, so, yeah, we covered that. Now, in the No Need to Panic section of the program, I mixed these up. Which Russia threatens Lithuania for enforcing EU sanctions on Kaliningrad.
They can just give it back.
No, wait a minute. I'm sorry. That was not the No Need to Panic story. That's the Need to Panic story. I should probably call it something else. The No Need to Panic story has to do with the sun. Sunspot with potential for solar flares doubles in size overnight and is pointed directly at Earth. I'm not kidding. That's what it says. A sunspot pointed toward Earth has the potential to cause solar flares. But according to experts, and hopefully they're experts in sunspots, they say it's far from unusual and ease concerns over how flares would affect the blue planet. Well, since when are we known as the blue planet? Capitalized, capital B, capital P.
Since Cosmos.
The blue planet? That's a little blue dot.
Pale blue dot. It's just the blue planet, maybe. I don't know.
Okay. Well, according to Rob Steinberg, who is the acting lead, why only acting lead? Why can't they hold on to the position? Of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Space Weather Forecast Office. And that does not fit on the door. This is what sunspots do. Over time, generally, they'll grow. They go through stages. And then they decay. Kind of like us. All right, so if you see a sunspot heading towards us, I guess that's not how it works. It's a solar flare that's heading towards us.
A mass ejection.
Yeah, don't panic. We're told to tell you not to panic. But here's what you do panic about, the Russia story. Yeah, Moscow warned today that Lithuania would face serious consequences for barring the transit of EU-sanctioned goods through its territory to the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad. Now, just to give you a sense here, Kaliningrad is like Russia's Hawaii, except there's no ocean. Basically, Russia, it's a big country, then it ends on the western side. Then you have the Baltics, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. And on the other side of Lithuania is this little tiny country, which is also part of Russia. I like to tell people sometimes, you know, pointing on the map where it says Russia, look, Russia's not that big. See how small they are? It works sometimes. You'd be surprised. But basically, to get to that part of Russia from the big part of Russia, you have to either fly over Lithuania or take a train, I believe, through Lithuania, or go around a different route, which is much longer. And so what Lithuania is doing is cutting off access. Yeah. Lithuania's state rail operator, known as LTG, announced on Friday it would no longer allow Russian goods that are under EU sanctions, including coal, metals, and construction materials, to transit through the country to Kaliningrad, which is that part of Russia, which the region's governor said would affect nearly half its imports. Officials in Moscow promised retaliation. Russia will definitely react to such hostile actions, said Nikolai Patrushev, secretary of the Russian Security Council. He pledged appropriate measures in the near future, but did not provide details. Their consequences will have a serious negative impact on the population of Lithuania. The reason this is something to worry about is because Lithuania is a bona fide member of NATO. And if Russia's response is in any way military, well, that brings NATO into this conflict pretty directly. I hope they're not that stupid. And I hope they realize that, yeah, you know, Lithuania can do this. It's their country, after all. They don't have to allow your trains or your cargo to go through their country. So maybe find a different way to do that. You know, I would not expect to be allowed to cut through Russia, you know, to get to Mongolia, if that somehow worked, if our countries had some hostilities between them. This shouldn't be a surprise. I'm surprised it took so long, but yeah, this is what happens. When you have conflicts, there are reactions to the conflicts, and sometimes you have to pay the price. Sorry.
It's consequences.
Yeah.
Consequences.
And what's happening in Ukraine is unforgivable.
So many consequences. Uh-huh. And yeah. We've all seen it. We've heard the lies, and we're tired of it. We've been very clear about what actions will be taken. The European Commission, NATO, all the allied nations, and anybody else with ears knows what's up. This has been projected to happen, and, you know, so it goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's where we stand on that. What's the story about SpaceX? SpaceX has been launching a whole bunch of things lately, haven't they? Something like 3 different things in 36 hours?
Yeah. I guess they were catching up on some work.
Okay, well, whatever they need to do. But I'm hearing some disturbing things there. SpaceX, on Thursday, fired employees who helped write and distribute an open letter criticizing the behavior of its chief executive, Elon Musk. That's according to 3 employees with knowledge of the situation. It's funny how we have to rely on people basically talking through back channels to find out what's happening in this company. Some SpaceX employees began circulating a letter which denounced Mr. Musk's activity on Twitter last Wednesday. The letter called the billionaire's public behavior and tweeting a frequent source of distraction and embarrassment and asked the company to rein him in. As you might know, Musk is currently in apparently trying to close a $44 billion deal to buy Twitter. In one day, by Thursday afternoon, SpaceX had fired some of the letter's organizers, simply writing a letter expressing concern over the erratic behavior of the company's chief executive. You know, it's basically trying to preserve the company, don't you think? So, yeah, they were fired. That's according to 3 employees and an email from SpaceX's president and chief operating officer. In her email, which was obtained by the New York Times, she said the company had investigated and terminated a number of employees involved with the letter. The letter, solicitations, and general process made employees feel uncomfortable, intimidated, and bullied, and were angry because the letter pressured them to sign onto something that did not reflect their views. We have too much critical work to accomplish and no need for this kind of overreaching activism. Okay, I don't understand. If you're concerned about intimidation and bullying, perhaps the best way to demonstrate that is not to fire people who disagree with you. You know, because that's what this seems like. I'm not sure how a letter pressures people to sign. You know, if you get something in the mail saying, you know, sign this if you agree, then you either sign it or you don't sign it. What you need to be able to prove is, were there actions taken against people who didn't sign it? Tell us about that. Rather than saying, this letter, the existence of this letter intimidated people, so therefore we had to take a strong-arm tactic and get rid of the people who wrote the letter. I mean, you know, I assume that employees of SpaceX know a thing or two about space and the important things that we need to make these gigantic machines go up into it. So firing them for writing words that you don't agree with might not be the best move for the company. Just like Elon continuing to talk might not be the best move for the company.
You want to know how this goes?
Yeah.
In history, SpaceX transcends Musk. Not the other way around.
Okay. How would that work?
Well, I think, like, a company will probably last beyond any one founder.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, this probably will be inconsequential.
Yeah, you know, one would like to think that, but it's not always the case.
Yeah, maybe they'll pack up shop tomorrow.
Stranger things have happened. Hey, what else has been going on? What else have we been up to like in last week? Doing some gardening and fighting off the wildlife?
Oh, amidst much activity, yeah. Doing my very best to build, rebuild, fix, take apart. I don't know. making my way, checking in on people, that's important. Doing a lot of that. And finding time. Finding time every which way.
Uh-huh. That's good.
I don't have much more. I'm just, you know, staying positive.
Well, we don't have much more time anyway, so I guess we have to leave people with thoughts of being positive. As, by the way, WUSB is turning 45 this week, June 27th, which I think is next Sunday? Oh, no, wait, is that, today's the 21st. So that would mean that's Monday. Next Monday is our actual 45th anniversary. Imagine that.
Congrats.
Mm-hmm.
Good on the station. I mean, pleasure to be here and rock on.
Yeah, we're still at really low power. We are trying to get a new transmitter. Of course, your support and help makes that possible. And please go to WUSB.fm for more information on that. But if you can, you might have to drive a little bit to get a good signal, but it's worth it. You can always listen to us on WUSB.fm. And you'll hear all kinds of amazing things. In fact, coming up in just a couple of minutes, you'll hear Finn's Revolution, which will take you till 9 o'clock. And basically, 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM. All right, then. We are going to call it a night tonight. And you can write to us, otw@2600.com. Let's try to stay positive, but alert at the same time. And never believe what you're told, because you're probably being lied to. But the truth is out there. You just have to open your eyes to it. Have a good night. Oh!